Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they're a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's time for news you can use, hopefully stuff that is of utility in your life, stuff that you can use for yourself, for your family, to stay well, to reverse disease. That's what we do each week here on Intelligent Medicine. 888-302-3684 is our number. And we've got lots to talk about this weekend, lots of health stories. We invite you to participate. The way you can do so is by calling us at 888-302-3684. And this week, a little later in the program, perhaps in our next hour, we'll talk about Dean Ornish's last blast at high-protein diets. He published an op-ed lambasting high-protein diets in the New York Times. That was just shortly after last week's broadcast. So I actually did an entire clinical focus podcast, which you can listen to at drhoffman.com. But we'll cover some of the high points this hour or next on Intelligent Medicine. And in the news this week, of course, Angelina Jolie's controversial decision to have her ovaries and fallopian tubes removed, not because she's got a disease, but to prevent cancer. And this has been the source of lots and lots of controversy. This is, of course, in the wake of her decision to have a bilateral mastectomy, a so-called prophylactic mastectomy. Prophylactic, of course, another word for condom. But in medicine, we say prophylaxis means prevention. And a prophylactic surgery means taking something out before it can cause trouble. And it all hinges around genetic testing, which is newly available. There are genes that put you at much higher risk of cancer. But genetics is not destiny. It just puts you at higher risk. It's not 100% that Angelina Jolie would have come down with cancer, but she does have a pretty terrible family history with ovarian cancer. And so she tested, and she found that she had a mutation of the BRCA gene site, which is said to cause about 5 to 10% of breast cancers and about 10 to 15% of ovarian cancers among Caucasian women in the United States. Now, that does not mean that if you don't have that mutation, you're fine, because keep in mind that 85 to 90% of ovarian cancers and 90 to 95% of breast cancers arise in women without the gene. So it's not it's not 100% if you have the gene that you're going to come down with cancer. So it's a decision that's fraught with controversy, because it's a little bit like playing Russian roulette. You know, there's one bullet in the barrel, and you spin the barrel, and you know, chances are when you pull the trigger, you're not going to blow your head off. But there is that risk. And so, big article here in the New York Times in the wake of her decision to have her ovaries and fallopian tubes removed, where medical experts agree that, quote, prophylactic removal of ovaries and fallopian tubes is strongly recommended in women before age 40 in BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutation carriers. Now, it's even controversial whether women should be screened for these things. Because you might say, well, yeah, let's detect cancer. Let's find out. But sometimes finding out is highly traumatic and may lead to excess unnecessary surgery and health problems attendant to those surgeries, because it's not inconsequential to have your breasts and ovaries and fallopian tubes removed, as we'll talk about in just a moment. I recently saw a patient of mine who was diagnosed with a small cancer in her breast, but she decided that she ought to have both breasts removed. And in retrospect, she was glad because the biopsy showed that other cancers were developing elsewhere in her breasts. And so she opted for a sense of security rather than the prospect of having continual mammograms and examinations and maybe findings that were borderline, like, yeah, there's a little calcification, but we're a little worried about that. Come back in 6 months. Well, you know, that's nerve-wracking for a lot of women. Other women would say, oh, my goodness, I don't want to have any kind of surgery to deface my God-given body. I want my body intact. It's an individual decision. I'll run the risk. So does this usher in a new era of empowerment for women? A lot of feminist websites are cheering her on, saying she's taking charge of her health and that's what women should do. Or is it overkill? Are we ushering in an era where a lot of people will remove organs because of genetic tests that reveal some slight susceptibility or even significant susceptibility to cancer? Is this going to be overkill, medical excess? Perhaps in the future there'll be genetic testing at birth. For example, here's one that I think is a potential interesting test. It's the APOE4 gene, which predisposes to higher risk of cardiovascular disease and Alzheimer's, but it also predisposes to greater risk of brain damage when you play soccer and head the ball or you play football. It may be that in the future that parents might elect to have this test done on their kids and then decide on the basis of the test, yeah, it's okay, go ahead, knock your head against opposing linemen, or don't do that because, like that 24-year-old professional football player who resigned recently, giving up a potential tens of millions of dollars in future salary, he said he wanted his brain intact. Well, perhaps the APOE4 test could shed light on which folks, boys and girls, might be at higher risk for brain damage with concussions. That's just an example of the potential of these tests. But then again, getting lots of information might lead us to be paranoid and coddle our kids too much or undertake unnecessary surgery. And oh, by the way, getting a hysterectomy, or in this case, Angelina Jolie elected to keep her uterus, because it turns out that uterine cancer is not associated with these genetic glitches. BRCA1 does not predispose to uterine cancer, but it predisposes to ovarian cancer and breast cancer. So her uterus remained intact. But it's a big deal because at a relatively young age, she's like 39 or 40, she will be bereft of normal female hormones. She'll go through instantaneous menopause. And oh, by the way, a surgical menopause is much worse than a normal menopause, because normal menopause is usually gradual. And a surgical menopause is like, you're driving along at 40 miles an hour and you hit a brick wall, because suddenly no hormones. And we're not just talking estrogen. We're talking a little bit of DHEA, a little bit of testosterone. Many women who undergo this type of surgery for whatever reason have major problems, physical problems, but also mental, emotional problems, decreased libido, loss of interest in sex. Although conversely, sometimes by virtue of the fact that you can't get pregnant, your interest in sex may be enhanced, paradoxically. But oftentimes, when I see women like this, they don't need just conventional synthetic hormone replacement. They need bioidentical hormones. They need estrogen, progesterone, DHEA, and just a little bit of testosterone, because testosterone sometimes bolsters mood, maintains sex drive, maintains muscle tone. And if you don't think that there are big changes that occur in the body of a woman when she has a hysterectomy, just think of your pet, your dog or your cat. They change, the female animals, the male animals as well, when they get surgery
to remove their sex organs, obviously to prevent population explosion among animals. I'm all for spaying and neutering. But the animals change. They have a greater tendency to, you know, put on weight, become a little pudgy, lethargic. And that can be a consequence of removal of the hormones. There's health problems also associated with the surgery. It's not all, oh, yeah, I'll just prevent cancer. It's a risk-benefit equation. Getting rid of your sex organs can have a negative effect. For example, men who receive hormone treatment for prostate cancer, well, it might reduce the risk of them dying of prostate cancer, but it increases their risk of dying of cardiovascular disease because they slow down. They might become pudgy and sedentary and at higher risk for type 2 diabetes, which is ultimately what kills them, not prostate cancer. So that's why aggressive treatment for prostate cancer is these days becoming a controversial proposition because, yeah, we saved the man from prostate cancer, but do they live longer? This opens up a whole Pandora's box of questions. And ultimately, who's going to pay for it? Will insurance companies underwrite prophylactic surgery? You know, you take a test and you find out you're at risk and you want to have your breasts or your uterus removed and, you know, you're following a celebrity role model. And is that the way to go? A lot of questions, and I think the answers are only going to be forthcoming and are also very personal, very individual, from person to person. Everyone has a different take on this, but we want to provide patients and women in particular with as much information as they can so they can make rational decisions and not be stampeded into making irrevocable decisions that they'll ultimately regret. 888-302-3684. I see we have some calls, and we'll start taking them in just a moment here on Intelligent Medicine.
This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I believe that Dr. O'Hara's probiotics provide proper intestinal balance, which goes way beyond optimizing digestion. It has a profound impact on virtually every system of the body. I'm an early adopter of Dr. O'Hara's probiotics. I personally take them every day, and I've been recommending them to my patients for over 10 years. I've long extolled the benefits of probiotics. A frequent focus of my health programs and wellness articles is the importance of the gut to overall health. I believe in Dr. O'Hara's because they combine a wide spectrum of beneficial bacteria with prebiotics that help the good bacteria establish a foothold in your GI tract. They're easy to take, well-tolerated, and convenient. They don't need refrigeration. Dr. O'Hara takes the centuries-long Japanese tradition of creating expert probiotic foods to the next level. They're the next generation of probiotics. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, updated several times weekly. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684. Should you be desirous of medical advice or you got a statement? And this weekend, I just completed attending the AAPMD conference, which is the American Academy of Physiological Medicine and Dentistry, where I presented a lecture on nutrition and sleep, which went over very well with this group of dentists and ENT doctors and people involved in craniosacral therapy. Let me explain. It's a group that is involved in a multidisciplinary approach to deal with airway problems. Well, what the heck is the airway? You know, I'm broadcasting to you over the airways, but while you're listening, you're relying on a very important airway, which is your breathing apparatus. And according to what I think is a real breakthrough formulation in medicine, the airway is crucial to performance, to mental focus, especially in kids suffering from attention deficit disorder, behavioral problems. They often don't sleep well. It's a childhood version of adult sleep apnea, which, by the way, is epidemic. People who have breathing problems and don't properly oxygenate at night are often exhausted, irritable. They have much more in the way of inflammation and pain in their bodies. It's part and parcel of conditions like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, and depression. And so
I gave a talk on the relationship between sleep and nutrition. And when I took the assignment a few months ago, I didn't realize there was just so much data linking diet and sleep, which are a bidirectional relationship. It is a two-way street because diet affects sleep and sleep affects diet. In fact, there was an article in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition that came out just a month or so ago, which shows that if you sleep more, you can actually reduce your appetite and lose weight. Now, you might think the opposite. You might think, well, hey, you know, I don't have time to sleep, and I'm just, you know, sleeping, whiling away the time sleeping is just lazy, and then you don't burn any calories. So I'll stay up all night, or, you know, I'll sleep 3 or 4 hours, and I'll burn more calories. Well, it turns out if you have sleep deprivation, you get fatter. That's what the evidence shows, and it happens via a variety of mechanisms, including increased stress hormones, decreased insulin sensitivity. You become, you know, just a sleep deprivation of a few days when administered to experimental volunteers will make them more insulin resistant. And ultimately, that makes you crave more sweets. It makes you fatter. It breaks down muscle. And off to the races you go, gaining weight, becoming pre-diabetic or ultimately diabetic. Also, it increases inflammation. Sleep deprivation increases inflammation. And so many inflammatory conditions may be caused by sleep deprivation. Oh, by the way, inflammation reduces your sleep quality. So it's a vicious cycle. The more inflamed you are, the less well you sleep. So what can you do? You need to regulate your blood sugar. You need to eat an anti-inflammatory diet. There are supplements that are helpful for sleep, which include omega-3 fatty acids. Of course, we've got things like tryptophan, melatonin, valerian, passion flower. You need to avoid certain foods that are excessively stimulating. For some people, food allergies interfere with sleep. On and on, there's so many different influences of diet on sleep and conversely on sleep on diet. It's a big deal. So you want to sleep better, you got to eat better. And conversely, it's a two-way street. All right, 888-302-3684. When we return, we're going to provide you with the secret to staying sexy. Stay tuned.
This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Beets are a nutrition goldmine rich in antioxidants, polyphenols, electrolytes, and dietary nitrates, which can help boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure levels. Super Beets is the easiest way to get these natural benefits. I feel confident offering this to you because I take Super Beets every day. It's my new favorite product. I can feel the energy it gives me within 20 minutes, and I want you to feel it too. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com, 800-738-2198 or intelligentbeets.com. Get a 30-day supply free. It comes with your first order and is backed by a money-back guarantee. Also receive a free book, Beat the Odds, and free shipping on your entire order. You'll love the results, guaranteed or your money back. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeats.com.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System, a complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh.
Why do I use Spry? Because it works?
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
A regular dose of intelligent medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Hey, man, here's the secret to staying sexy. We'll discuss it in just a moment. But first, let's hear from Ed, who's in Flint, Michigan. How you doing?
I'm okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. I had a question about diverticulitis. I had a bout with it a couple weeks ago, and when you mention it to anyone, the first thing they say is seeds. Mm-hmm. A couple of the studies I've read recently aren't really convinced of that. I wonder what your opinion was.
Yeah, absolutely. It used to be thought, and logically enough, because diverticulosis consists of outpockets in the intestine, and these little outpockets are kind of like blind loops, and it's thought that bacteria can fester in there. And if a seed or a small food particle gets stuck in there, it's a little bit like, you know, when some food gets stuck in your tooth and it starts to literally rot, and that can be a source of infection. So the idea used to be that if you took, you eat strawberries, they have like little tiny seeds, or other foods that have small seeds or allow small food particles to lodge within the diverticuli, that would be a trigger. Well, sounds logical, but as so often happens in medicine and science, things that sound logical when subject to investigation don't turn out to be true. And so they did a study, and they looked at the diets of people who have diverticulitis, and it turned out there was no correlation between the intake of these raspberries and the foods that are thought to be the culprit foods and diverticulitis. So let me ask you, what do you typically eat? What's your diet like?
I eat a pretty healthy diet. I try to stay organic and probably not enough roughage, but I eat a fairly healthy diet, I think.
Okay, so the diet that I use pretty successfully with diverticulitis patients, and it's actually something you can self-administer. I mean, it'd be nice to sit down with a nutritionist and fine-tune it, but you can actually get a lot of information about this diet because there's websites and there's books. I actually wrote the introduction to Breaking the Vicious Cycle, a book about the specific carbohydrate diet by a lady named Elaine Gottschall. She's since passed away, but she originated this diet in the 1960s. And it's followed by literally hundreds of thousands of people who have ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease and diverticulitis. And it even may have a claim to fame in alleviating symptoms, of, mood-related symptoms. Many autistic parents have their kids on specific carbohydrate diets.
Oh, wow.
It's certainly helpful for irritable bowel syndrome. So what the idea there is, you break the vicious cycle. What's the vicious cycle? It's the vicious cycle of bacterial proliferation. Bad bacteria that proliferate and multiply rapidly within your intestinal tract often subsist on certain types of carbohydrates, indigestible carbohydrates or partially indigestible carbohydrates. And by changing the type of carbohydrates that you take, and you don't have to eliminate carbs. This is not like a ketogenic diet, although a ketogenic diet fulfills the criteria for a specific carbohydrate diet, but that's a little too draconian for some people. You can eat certain carbohydrates and not others, and you can change your bacterial population. And that will keep the bad bacteria at bay, and that the diet may actually permit you to eat some of these foods that have small particles that have a tendency to lodge in the diverticuli. That doesn't seem to matter that much. You're very astute because you read the studies, and the studies say, yeah, that's an old wives' tale. Doesn't seem to make a difference.
Right. I love all kinds of nuts, too, and I just kind of hate to cut that out. I know they're good for you.
Yeah, and what you can do is you can also have nut butters, if you're concerned about particle size, or you can just chew very mindfully and make sure that particles don't, just in case, that there's some merit to that theory. Often studies may obscure a partial effect. It may be that for 5 or 10% of individuals, the particles do matter, but in a big study that you don't see that, it washes out. So, you can use nut butters. Nut butters are really, and nut flours are really a staple of the specific carbohydrate diet because they allow substitution when you're making breadings and desserts and bread substitutes. You can use almond flour in these diets.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah, good.
Yeah, so check it out. And hey, do me a favor. You need to try this how often do you get attacks, by the way?
Actually, my first one was a couple weeks ago.
Okay, so if you don't have an attack for 2 years, it may be totally coincidence, or it may be because of the diet. I mean, see, it's actually easier for people to have frequent bouts of something or other, and then they make a change, and then it's easier to find out if there's a chance. I mean, I was going to say, call us in 6 weeks and tell us if you had an attack. Well, that, you know, that's not going to be proof positive that the diet is fending things off, because people with diverticulitis can sometimes go for months and years without attacks. But it's a great diet. It's a preventive diet. And also, it's a diet which can help shave off extra pounds, but there's not a terrible amount of deprivation. It's just sometimes a little inconvenient to pick out the right foods.
It sounds good to me.
Give it a shot. Give it a shot. I think you'll find it helpful. And, you know, probiotics are helpful. There's an herb called a berberine, which is helpful. Berberine is a mild antibiotic in the intestinal tract. Sometimes we give other types of antibacterial aromatic herbs, things sometimes like oregano. Olive leaf also suppresses bacterial. There are a lot of things that do that, and there are various formulas. One of the formulas I give to people who have intestinal overgrowth, SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and I just wrote an article on this, which you can actually check out at drhoffman.com. I think it was the article of the week in our newsletter last week. Small intestine bacterial overgrowth is different than diverticulosis or diverticulitis, because it occurs upstream. It occurs in the small intestine, and diverticulitis occurs in the large intestine. But what helps the small intestine often helps the large intestine, logically enough, because they're adjacent, and they're part of the, you know, basically upriver and downriver. And by taking a couple of products that we like, Candibactin AR and Candibactin BR, these are products by Netagenics, that you can actually help to suppress the overgrowth of harmful bacteria. But you need to change the diet fundamentally. Just taking a pill doesn't suffice. Diet modification is essential to conquering this condition, and it really works. I mean, I've got, you know, one colleague I know, he's actually a friend, he's an attorney, and he was having terrible attacks, and they actually took out parts of intestine, and he kept having attacks, and they said, look, we can't take out more. You know, there's nothing more we can do here. And he came to me, and I said, well, you know, try the diet. We gave him certain herbs, probiotics. When he's following the diet, no problem. He's done great. All right. Let's talk about, yeah, I promised, hey, I'm not going to leave you high and dry here. Men, here's the secret to staying sexy. You ready for it? You know, the TV monitor is on in the radio studio here, and I was glancing up. I didn't hear the sound, but I saw an ad for one of those magical elixir things for erectile dysfunction. You know, they got lurid names, you know, things that make you, you know, longer, harder, better, more manly, etc. But the answer does not lie in these products, in my opinion. This article outlines a sure path to sexual potency. It's in the Journal of Sexual Medicine. Exercise linked to improved erectile and sexual functioning in men. The study looked at 300 participants who reported their daily activity levels, which researchers then categorized as sedentary, mildly active, moderately active, or highly active. And the subjects also self-reported their sexual function, including their ability to have erections, orgasms, the quality and frequency of erections, and overall sexual functioning. And what they found out was, not surprisingly, men who reported more frequent exercise had higher sexual function scores. And, you know, you might argue, well, is this correlation or causation? You know, does the exercise help you get better erections? Or, you know, because you already are in pretty good physical shape, you're able to exercise at high levels and you get erections. Well, that could be argued. But there's no question that exercise helps to promote circulation, and certainly helps body image, right? Because you get a flabby body, it's like, meh, you know, you don't feel too sexy. But they suggest a total of 18 METs of exercise per week. No, we're not talking about a baseball team. METs refers to metabolic equivalence. It's a term of art in exercise science. They say a total of 18 METs, which is a measurement of exertion, can be achieved by combining exercises with different intensities. But, and here's how you do it. It's sort of like one from column A, one from column B. 18 METs is the equivalent of 2 hours of strenuous exercise, such as running or swimming. That's all you need per week. 3.5 hours of moderate exercise, or
6 hours of light exercise, that might be garden work, raking, brisk walking. And that'll do it, they say, to make you sexier. They say there's no one-size-fits-all approach. Is that supposed to be a pun? and there are exceptions, I have to say, because very high levels of aerobic exercise, you know, ultra marathoners, you know, they're pounding the pavement, they're, you know, running fools doing, you know, 70, 80 mile running workouts per week. You actually can kind of knock down your sex drive. It's actually been shown to decrease your testosterone, these very, very high levels of exertion. But for the vast majority of us, there's no danger of going into the red zone on excess exercise. And cycling, of course, can sometimes suppress sexual desire and sexual performance because of a phenomenon called pudendal neuralgia, which is compression of the pudendal nerves, which are associated with erection and ejaculation, by the bicycle seat itself. You know, those hard bicycle seats, and you spend hour upon hour, you know, riding long distances on these hard seats. And so these seats need to be ergonomic. They need to fit you properly. Because, I mean, this is not a problem in all men. You know, I ride long distance. It doesn't seem to bother me too much. But some men require ergonomically designed bicycle seats to avoid damage to the nerves that supply that certain area of the body that is responsible for sexual performance. All right, 888-302-3684. And when we return, I'll tell you how to fend off temptations to reach for sweets. This is Intelligent Medicine.
If you're like me, you don't have time to be sick, yet our busy lifestyles can leave us vulnerable. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Do you know that in Japanese, Kayo means strength? This winter, find your immune strength with four key natural immune-boosting supplements from our friends at Kyolic. It's what I call the Kyolic Advantage, and what I use myself. Try Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract 103 for natural immune wellness and cardiovascular health. Since 70% of your immune system is in the digestive tract, Chiodophilus bolsters immunity and gut health with shelf-stable beneficial bacteria. On the go, try Kyo Green, a convenient powdered greens drink mix that offers a natural source of key vitamins and minerals. And don't forget ModuCare, a unique combination of plant sterols proven effective at balancing and strengthening immunity. So eat right, exercise, and get the Kyolic Advantage to optimize your immune health today. Available at fine health food stores everywhere.
drhoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Here's an alert for stress eaters. Are you a stress eater? I was once a stress eater. And one of the most stressful things I ever underwent was my medical training. And, you know, you'd have to study and cram for exams. And in order to get me to sit down for long periods of time and commit to memory huge amounts of information, I would sort of incentivize myself with a bowl of granola. I would sit it down on the desk and I'd have my medical books and I would crunch on the granola. And the net result is that I'd go through a bowl of granola. But I'm not sure I retained a lot of information. But it was better than what my colleagues were doing because they were studying in the medical library, which was conveniently situated next to some vending machines. And they would go for Cokes and Dr. Pepper and all manner of candy bars. And so stress definitely is a trigger that disinhibits people from the standpoint of eating. So how can you fend that off? Well, a new study suggests that, yeah, once again, we're going to invoke exercise as the solution. A research team at the University of Innsbruck in Austria reports that a 15-minute walk reduces the urge for a sugary snack, even in people who are overweight, under pressure, and literally have candy available at the tips of their fingers. And they did this experiment where they had two experimental settings. One group exercised and one group didn't. The exercise was moderate, 15 minutes of walking. And then they had these participants sit down and do a test, which was somewhat stressful. And then they were offered a selection of high-calorie sugary snacks. They were even asked to unwrap and handle the sugary snack of their choice without eating it. And their level of craving and emotional arousal was measured. They were like wired for their heart rate and blood pressure. And the ones who'd exercised before appeared to fend off the cravings better. Okay, what people won't do for the sake of science. All right, here's an answer to a question that a lot of people have. You know, how should you take your vitamin D? Vitamin D is offered in many forms. They sometimes try to beef it up with magnesium or sometimes something called biopurine, which I actually don't think makes that much difference in terms of the bioavailability of the vitamin D. But here's a way that you can make sure that your dosage of vitamin D goes further. And it's a study that's in the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. It turns out that a high-fat meal, or you know, just simply dietary fat, not necessarily high fat, but some dietary fat taken along with the vitamin D enhances absorption. They looked at 50 healthy older men and women who either received a fat-free meal, a meal with 30% of calories as fat, and one with a high level of fat. And after 12-hour fast, all subjects took a single 50,000 international unit vitamin D supplement with their test breakfast meal. And what they found was that subjects who consumed fat, and by the way, this is done hours after the fatty meal, so it didn't have to be precisely coordinated time-wise. But they say that the presence of fat in a meal with which a vitamin D3 supplement is taken significantly enhances absorption of the supplement. They said that the ratio of monounsaturated fats to polyunsaturated fats in that meal doesn't influence its absorption. So it doesn't matter what kind of fat, just plain a little bit of fat. So if you're going to take your, I mean, I guess an example of that is if you're going to take your vitamin D with your fat-free oatmeal, it's less likely to be absorbed than if you have your vitamin D with a couple of eggs, which have dietary fat, or with something that contains protein and fat. You know, maybe throw in a slice of nitrite-free bacon with your breakfast to enhance your vitamin D absorption. How big a magnitude of this? It was pretty significant. The level of vitamin D after the dose was 32% greater in subjects consuming a fat-containing meal compared with fat-free meals. So that's pretty cool. I'll take that. That's a one-third improvement in absorption. Okay, researchers are raising questions about marijuana legalization. Is it good? Is it safe? Here's a new concern, which is that the marijuana, according to analysis, is much stronger than it used to be. But also, there's a concern that modern marijuana is often laced with heavy metals and fungus. That's not good, especially when you're smoking it. You know, say you're smoking and inhaling, and the marijuana has been sitting around too long, and like plant material tends to be, it tends to be overgrown with fungus. So you're inhaling vapors, which may literally contain fungal spores or fungal toxins, mold toxins. That's not particularly good. And it comes from an authoritative source. Brian Handwerk writes in the Smithsonian.com, which is a pretty reliable source. So there are concerns about the safety of the marijuana. It's not inspected. It's not monitored for THC levels, which are double to triple the levels that were common in buds from the 1980s when baby boomers were smoking or maybe had already kicked the weed. Now pot is much stronger. But also the possibility that it might contain adulteration and contaminants. The concern is that products that are not properly monitored and inspected can draw in heavy metals from the soil in which they're grown, and even there could be pesticides or other substances that end up in a product. So, you know, legalization of marijuana, all right, yeah, but that's only the first step. We need to develop better means of, just like any kind of agricultural product. You know, we're talking organic here. You know, maybe there should be an organic seal of approval for marijuana. That means regulations for marijuana production and inspection still need to be hammered out. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Stay with us for our second hour, those of you who get 2 hours of intelligent medicine. 888-302-3684 is our number.